All right. Thank you, everyone, for coming. This really means a lot to us. We'll probably have more people coming in and out. That's fine. Thank you so much. This is the Denver Film Critics panel. This is a panel, I got to say, because we got to give props before we begin. This is a panel that was started by the late, the great Reggie McDaniel, who many of you may remember Reggie. He really was Colorado's film critic. He was somebody who loved horror movies. He was a real friend to the horror film. He used to come here every year and sit in these chairs by himself and basically just talk about horror films to his fans and to anybody who wanted to talk to him. He was a big fan of the Slasher Basher movie, as he used to call them. He is unfortunately no longer with us, and it is a tradition that we're carrying on to keep this going, this kind of to and fro with our readers or people who don't even know us. So thank you so much for coming. It means so much to us, and we're carrying on what Reggie started. To my far left, your right, is Michael Felscher. Michael Felscher is the owner of Red Shirt Pictures. Any of you who recently purchased a DVD or Blu-ray copy of Halloween 2, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, John Carpenter's They Live, The Stepfather 1 and 2, Evil Dead 2, or The Monster Squad know this man. He has produced and put together a number of the documentaries and extras that are on those DVDs and Blu-rays, and he is a great fan of the horror films, specifically some of the horror films that we all love. So it is with great pleasure that we welcome Michael Felscher today with us. The bearded one sitting next to me, I'll just call him the bearded one.
I have a beard too.
That's true.
His is a little more luscious.
Rude now, dude.
I am. I blew it. It was going so well.
I agree. Yeah, call him Kid Luscious Beard. That's the way to go.
Okay. I like that. Kid Luscious Beard sitting next to me is Brad McCarg. Brad McCarg is he is the publisher and editor-in-chief for Mile High Cinema. Brad recently had a revival screening of Ravenous, the 1999 Antonio Bird cannibal Western mystical horror film that came out in 99. Nobody saw it. He managed to get a screening of it where about 30 people came, I believe. This film starred Guy Pearce and David Arquette. Nobody saw this film in 1999. You had about 30 people come, which is much more than when people saw it originally when it was in theaters, which is a huge achievement unto itself. So for that reason alone, I applaud you, sir. But Brad McCarg is a very talented writer. I hope you guys check out his stuff. He writes primarily for Dread Central, in which he recently wrote a very well-received and controversial review of the remake of The Evil Dead, as well as a recent review of Texas Chainsaw 3D, which is one of my favorite pieces by any writer this year. You can find his work on DreadCentral.com. As well as Screen Invasion. Sorry, I wrote it in very small letters. Screen Invasion. He's a very talented film critic, and we're a very passionate film critic, so we're very, very fortunate to have him here with us today.
You do write very small. That's like one of the Killer's notebooks from 7.
I know.
Really
careful. I'm gonna write your name on my list, man. And then sitting to my right is Dave Minkus. Dave Minkus is the creator of ScreenGeeks.com. It is a Colorado Springs-based website. It's definitely a real hoven for movie fans. The UK spinoff of it, ScreenGeeks.com UK, actually just recently won a Golden Mike Award for excellence in podcasting. Dave, this is his 8th year here at Starfest. Dave has been one of the behind-the-scenes geniuses. He really is like the great Oz and powerful behind the curtain. Don't look behind the curtain. You'll see Dave. We're really fortunate to have Dave Minkus with us this morning.
You're the only one without facial hair, by the way.
I am the only one without facial hair. What does that say about me? My name is Barry Wurst. I'm a film professor at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. I'm a Hawaii native, so I write for a Hawaii magazine called Maui Time Weekly. So you can find my reviews at MauiTime.com, as well as Rotten Tomatoes. Thank you.
You are my hero, sir.
I appreciate it. Sounds like a scuffle going on out there. This is my third time moderating this panel, and this panel is a labor of love for me, and as I know, it was a labor of love for Reggie, so forgive me for about being so earnest about this, but this is a real treat for us to be able to do this and to be out here together to talk to you guys. The one thing I always do every year is we always talk so much, we never get the chance to do Q&A, so I want to make sure we talk to you guys this year. But let us figure out who it is you're dealing with up here. We're going to start with Michael. I'm going to give you guys all the same question. I'm going to put Michael in the hot seat, ask him the question first. Michael, what is the scariest movie you've ever seen?
Oh, that's hard to say. I mean, there are films that, of course, make you jump out of your seat and so forth. But the ones that get to me are the ones that I necessarily don't want to go back and watch again.
Yeah.
Because the one that really disturbed me the most and really got under my skin was Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Sure.
Especially the home invasion sequence, because that can happen.
Yeah.
And it was portrayed in such a realistic, disturbing. It wasn't gory, but it was just the idea of that happening to you. I mean, you know, but then I have friends who are scared, you know, if they're, I'm not a deeply religious person, so something like The Exorcist doesn't necessarily play that way with me, but then a friend of mine, to this day, he's a grown man, he's 45 years, he still won't watch The Exorcist alone.
Yeah.
So it really comes out of your own personality and your own personal fears, I think, as to what you find the scariest movie of all time. But like for me, it's not really a horror film. Requiem for a Dream.
Sure.
Those last 20 minutes, I have not gone back to the movie theater where I saw that, because every time I see that movie theater, I think of the last 20 minutes of Requiem for a Dream, and it's like I have to go into therapy. So those are the things that really kind of just get under my skin, just the stuff that's like almost hits too close to home.
Based in reality, absolutely. Brad?
Oh, let's see here. If you're talking about like the lingering effects, for me, that's what the barometer for what scares me is, if I can go home at night and rush to my light to turn it on because sure. I'm a little scared. I'll admit, Paranormal Activity did freak me out.
The first one.
Because I think it plays into the whole idea that you're not safe in your own home. And I don't care what people say, ghosts or demons or what have you, they can be scary if presented in the right way. And I think the found footage format is probably the best way to do that. Blair Witch freaked me out. I was also like 17 when I saw it. So, and I went home to an empty house at 2 a.m. So that freaked me out.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you know, I've been disgusted by films. I actually had to walk out of the room twice when I first saw Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah.
Because there are some scenes in there that I don't care how hard you are, it's just like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's eternal.
Like, yeah, some of them are just so bad. So, yeah, recently, definitely Paranormal Activity, which was, what, 4 years ago now? Something like that?
Yep.
And there were some scenes in Sinister that definitely gave you a good shock, including the lawnmower scene. That was just fucked up. But I usually err more towards the found footage side.
Okay.
For what scares
me. So we got reality, we got the found footage. So obviously reality is something that kind of creeps us out. For me personally, it's a film that was made in South Korea. It came out in 2004. It's called The Tale of Two Sisters. That's the scariest damn movie I've ever seen in my life. I saw it in the theater. It was actually playing at what used to be the Tivoli Theater downtown. I saw it with my buddy Zach, who's a diehard horror fan like I am. And about 10 minutes in, we're like, do you want to go? Wasn't really prepared for this. It bothered us so much. We ended up sitting through it, and I think it's one of the finest films of its year and one of the best horror films ever made, but no film has ever scared me as much as A Tale of Two Sisters. It was remade in America, a film called The Uninvited, which is a piece of garbage. If you've seen The Uninvited and you're like, man, I wish that movie could have been made so much better, there's a film called A Tale of Two Sisters. I recommend you check it out. It is one of the most terrifying ghost stories I've ever seen. Dave.
I have to be with Michael. A lot of I can't really name specific names because I tend to stay away from the genre if I possibly can. It's like, I know my kryptonite. And it's the home invasion stuff. I forget what we saw at the Mile High
Kidnapped.
Horror Festival.
Kidnapped. God.
Effed Kidnapped. With me for about a week afterward. And it thoroughly disgusted me. At the same time, it's there's something to be said about when a film brings a strong reaction about you. I don't know if anyone saw the ABCs of Death, but for me personally, this is the other thing that really disturbed me, was when they got, for personal reasons, when they got to, I think it was M for Miscarriage, I wanted to go find Ty West and cock punch him. I'm not going to lie. And I still feel very strongly about it, but there's something about the horror genre that when it gets to you like that, it's a genre, it's something that doesn't happen with any other genre. My guilty confession is Event Horizon, the only decent movie that Paul Westcrib ever did.
The playback
Thank
footage.
You. That movie's terrifying.
That movie, when they see the tape snippet of what happened on the ship and you don't get a full view of it, it's pretty messed up.
I was dumb enough to try to watch that movie Home Alone with the lights off, and I made it about 8 minutes in. It's hell no, turn the light on. And
it's Hellraiser in space, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty messed up,
yeah. Very good. All right, well, let's talk briefly about some of the films that came out last year. I thought we'd kind of do a recap from the last Starfest to the current Starfest. We'll talk about kind of the films that have come out as well as some of the stuff that's upcoming. Let's first talk about VHS. VHS is one of the most talked about festival films that came out last year. I could feel all the enthusiasm from this panel. Michael, what did you think of VHS? Did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Yeah. You know what? It's funny. I appreciate what they try to do with it, and I actually hear VHS 2 is much better.
That's what we hear too, yeah.
The problem with it is, at the end of the day, if it's too much, for me it was too much of a, just the technique was interesting, but not the stories, not the interest. It was just like, yeah, and there, I don't know. For me, I just kind of sat there admiring the intent more than the actual end product, and it just didn't really come together for me very much.
Okay.
I honestly don't remember very much about it now.
That's probably not a good sign of a good
author. Yeah, if you're walking out of the movie going, oh, which one did I see? That's not a good sign at all.
I thought it was offensively bad. It's, you know, borderline misogynistic.
Yeah.
Especially the short.
Borderline? You think? I think it goes way over the board. I think it swims over the board.
But I think beyond that, I mean, there were a couple segments I mildly enjoyed. Like, I didn't outright hate them. The,
Doesn't
October.
Suck is not a good review, sir.
Doesn't suck that much. The last one by Radio Silence with the house.
Yeah, I like that one.
It was mostly a setup for a couple cheap scares at the end, but it worked, I thought.
Yeah, there's a reason they put that one at the end of the picture.
Yeah.
They want to at least leave you with a little bit of an upper.
Yeah.
So, but and you have to go through too much crap.
The first one I thought was interesting, which I thought could have been much better as a standard narrative. And the weird thing that happened to Emily when she was younger, the webcam one, the Skype one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That one,
yeah.
I didn't like the ending, but I thought the build-up to the ending was great.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem with that movie is I think found footage relies so much on the slow burn effect. It just doesn't really translate well to a short film format. And I think the biggest, like, most egregious offense to that is Ty West's, to bring him up again. His middle one was just so boring, and the whole thing was just for this big, shocking twist at the end. And it was like, that's it?
No, the Ty West one, which one was that?
That was The Honeymoon.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the second Honeymoon.
That's right.
And yeah, that one, just that pissed me off so bad.
You know, my
I like Ty West, but yeah, it was bad.
I like him too. Yeah, no, I'll say really quick. Like, that one, I think, kind of sums up the problem with that movie. I thought that vignette got interesting just as it was ending. You know, it's like they were just getting the story going, and it felt like, and that's when they ended. It was just like for a cheap shock. Same with that awful one in the woods, which is probably arguably the worst one, where it's the kids running in the woods, the monster that you can only
second
see pixelated. No, second worst, okay. Like, good idea, but like not fleshed out. That's why the Radio Silence one at the end, at least it was it felt like a contained.
Yeah, I like
film.
They were all arguing over it. No, this one was the worst. No.
This like second worst.
Clearly, we love this.
It depends on if we're including the wraparound tape
that
47.
Which was garbage.
Yeah.
Garbage.
So terrible.
Garbage. Yeah.
There's a lot of promise in VHS. I think that the issue was with the execution. And I think Brad may have touched on it, that with found footage, you just can't get everything fleshed out that you need to. Radio Silence was just go in and get the scares and have a good time with it, which is why it was my favorite by far. The first one with the glasses and picking up the girl, that was just completely inexcusable as far as I was concerned.
The ending, though,
that
was creepy as hell.
The Skype webcam one was so good until the reveal. And you hit the reveal, you're like, this is going to be great, this is going to be... No, come on, guys, you can... probably the best way I can put it is... they could have done so much better. I don't write off any of the filmmakers who were in this film, who worked on this film necessarily, but it's like, you guys can do so much better than this. Okay, whoever did the wraparound, it sucked, sorry.
Well, I'll start with you, Dave. Let's talk about The Cabin in the Woods. What'd you think of The Cabin in the Woods, Dave? Let's hear it.
It was better than Avengers. It was the best Joss Whedon-based film that came out last year. It plays with conventions of horror in ways that are... I haven't had that much fun at a horror movie in I don't know how long.
Is that fair, though? Whedon didn't direct it.
But he wrote it. He was on set every single day. He produced it. He was very...
It's kind of like the George
involved.
Lucas of it, even when George Lucas wasn't
Yeah,
director,
I mean, I get where you're
still.
Coming from. I just think it kind of, you know, discounts Drew Goddard's...
No, I don't discount what Drew Goddard did at all, because of his past working with him on Buffy. They were so in sync with it, I think it still...
It could have been given a co-director.
It could have.
Most likely. Okay.
The fact that there was this base storyline behind it that's... They say it wasn't intentional talking about the film industry, which is kind of what we're talking about today. If they didn't mean that, they're like idiot savants of writing, because it was a beautiful discussion about how films work in horror today. And getting out, the importance of getting outside of that box of set it up, everyone who has sex dies, the virgin lives, and cut to the end where the killer might or might not be dead. It totally turned everything on its head.
It's a film that you go into hopefully not knowing very much about it.
Yes.
You don't... And what I thought was actually, for me, it was weird, because I recognized in the credits, the director of photography on Cabin in the Woods was a man named Peter Deming, who was the director of photography on Evil Dead 2, the ultimate Cabin in the Woods movie. I was like, oh, okay, so what's this going to be? This movie takes you in directions that you'd never see coming. It's so witty, so smart, and I have to admit, I didn't want to bring it into the theater with me. I tried to keep it out. Going to see the Evil Dead remake so soon after Cabin in the Woods was really a lot more challenging than I thought it was. Because I'm sitting here going, okay, these are the kids that that movie was making fun of.
Right.
Because these fuckers are dumb. And and they're not nearly as likable as the ones from the... I mean, when you see that trope taken and turned inside out and done so brilliantly, it's almost like, how do you go back to it again straightforward? It's really hard.
When we saw Evil Dead 2 at the Draft House last night, they had a special screening at 10:30. It was amazing. But I was thinking, like, this and Cabin in the Woods is like a perfect double feature.
Yeah.
It's odd. It is odd that they would release the remake almost a year to the day after the Cabin in the Woods, because I had the same thing when I was in high school. I saw Scream, and I thought, this is the last word on the slasher movie. They never have to go back to a straight-faced slasher movie again. This movie is making fun of it. It is commenting on it. We could just move on and evolve.
Cabin in the Woods originally would have been out about 3 years ago.
Right.
Because it was made by MGM, and then MGM went through one of its 50th bankruptcies.
Right.
It sat around for 2 years because he did, Chris Hemsworth did that before he got Thor.
Right.
He also did Red Dawn.
Yeah, at the same time.
That should have stayed on the shelf.
Yeah, that one. But, so he had done that before Thor came along. He had only been Captain Kirk's father in the opening of the Star Trek.
That's right.
So no one knew who he was. And it sits around for 2 years. And now there's only 1 year between the Evil Dead remake and that. So it's like, well, you know, what are you going to do? Yeah. But, I'm sure we'll talk about the Evil Dead remake.
We'll get to that. Let's jump to Mama. That came out in January. Anybody see it on this panel? Or?
I did not.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, start with Michael.
I thought it was very effective for what it was. And I was glad that it was so successful because it actually was... Problem with horror movies, especially these days, most of them are marketed very, very well. But the movies are shit. They really are. I mean, like, most of the remakes that come out, they're extremely well, and then they have big opening weekend, and then the next week, it's like everyone almost gets their money back. It does so poorly. I mean, I remember the Friday the 13th remake opened with like $25 million, and then the next week it made like 1.5.
Right.
Because the word got out. Mama actually built on its audience and did very well, and because it actually played very well with the audience. My problem with Mama, I've seen that movie before. There really wasn't anything terribly original in it. I didn't think that it did anything. It had the Guillermo del Toro influence on it, but it wasn't as effective as something like The Orphanage or his own film, The Devil's Backbone.
Mm, yeah.
But it was good. It was a quality production, but I didn't walk out of it thinking this was a high watermark for the genre or anything.
Okay. Brad?
No, I take the exact opposite stance. I thought it was, and not the high watermark part, just the fact that you didn't hate it. Mm. I mean, the short it's based on is great because it relies so it relies so much on that one scare, that one basic scare. It's also beautifully shot. It's what all one take, as it, you know, swoops through the house and into the bedroom and up until the very end at the reveal. But they, like a lot of shorts that they try to adapt, they tried to stretch it out into a story. And then you have goth Jessica Chastain, which was just ridiculous. Oh, she was
didn't
terrible.
Buy it?
She was terrible in it. And I love her. I mean, I think she's great in everything else.
It was hard to see her that because Zero Dark Thirty was out at the same time. And it was
Wait.
So that was a little discombobulating. I have to admit it was a little bit strange.
But, I mean, the Mama effects were pretty cool. I mean, that whole janky walking thing that those creatures do, it's still scary even though you've seen it a million times. And it had some cool scares, the cheap flash camera scare in the cabin and the... Cabin in the Woods, were effective, but as a whole, it was just like I said, you've seen it before, and then the ending, oh my God. Who saw Mama? Who hated the ending like I did? Thank you, I'm not alone.
That was weak.
So it was like a goddamn soap opera. It was so bad.
It was weak sauce, I gotta say.
So no, I did not like Mama.
Okay.
Brad, you need to learn to just let it go. Don't hold back, man. Don't hold back.
You need to say, fuck Mama. Just turn the table over and just storm out of the room.
Well, let's turn your volume up to an 11. What did you think of Texas Chainsaw 3D, Brad?
That movie had no right to exist in any way, shape, or form. It was little more than an egregious excuse to show, what's her name, Alexandra Daddario, to show her cleavage. I mean, the end scene when he snips her shirt for no reason,
I did like how the shirt hung on her breast, ridiculous. I mean, it's like she's strung up like this, and the shirt is clinging.
Perfect. Right, right here.
It's just like, oh no, that wasn't taped on. No. I mean, come on, it was just.
Wait.
I mean, either show it or don't. You know, don't tease us. That was mean.
Let's talk just about that one part of the film.
The thing that pissed me off the most about it is that it was offensive to fans of horror in general because it's like no one even tried.
Hmm.
The whole thing was just so lazy. The dialogue, the execution, the cinematography, the fact that Leatherface should at least be in his 70s by this point. The fact that she was, the main character was supposed to have been born in what?
1974 or something.
The mid-70s?
Right.
So, yeah, she's the hottest 45-year-old I've ever seen.
But I would like to recommend, please go out and buy this upcoming special edition Blu-ray that's coming out. It has a lot of really great featurettes and commentary. I'm not going to say why I think it's a good idea. I'm just saying, you might want to give it a shot.
But, yeah, that movie I saw because it's a new horror movie and I really wanted to see it. And then I just walked out angry.
You know, kind of like we were talking about films that just haven't stayed with us. I vaguely remember it. I saw it back in January. It was the first film I saw this year. And other than the fact that the 3D was passable and I thought the filmmaking was competent, there's so little that film has, that I've taken with me. The sequel that Tobe Hooper did in 86.
That's a classic.
I love that film because that movie is a horror comedy, but it is outrageous and disgusting. And it really does feed into everything you'd expect from a movie with the title
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. One that doesn't change. Tobe was very smart when he did Chainsaw 2. He realized he's not going to out-intensify what he did with the first movie.
Right.
That's an impossible feat. I feel bad for anyone who tries. So he said, I'm going to turn this thing into a black comedy.
Yeah.
I'm going to go completely the opposite way with it. And a lot of fans didn't like it because it wasn't the first Chainsaw. That's why I liked it so much, because he didn't try to imitate. He just upped the weirdness factor to an unbelievable degree. I mean, you got Dennis Hopper running around the chainsaw, who's at that point crazier than the people he's chasing.
Right.
And he's our hero. So that, I just found that really funny, and it was just a great statement on the yuppie culture of the time, and it was just full of really great over-the-top performances, and a lot of the sequels, especially the remakes, the Michael Bay-produced remakes, totally missed that point.
It's Michael Bay!
Well, yeah, that goes without saying. But, Chainsaw 3D for what it was, I didn't hate it, but it's not a good film, I don't think. But I will say that, for me, it is a little bit tempered by the fact that I got to do a commentary with the Chainsaw alumni who were in that film. So I got Bill Moseley, Gunnar Hansen, John Dugan, and Marilyn Burns all in a room together. And for 90 minutes, we talk about the movie and whatever the hell else was on their minds. And I do want to part just a really quick, very funny story. John Dugan, who played Grandpa in the original and in the remake, in the original, he's doing this moment where they slice her finger and he sucks her finger, and he's doing these little meeting motions with his hands like he's in ecstasy. He said, yeah, Michael, I gotta admit, I was a 20-year-old man sucking the finger of a beautiful girl. I got a little turned on. I didn't want to, but it was a situation. And everyone in the room's like, oh my God, oh my God. It's like, no, I wasn't trying to be like, hey, guess what happened? It was just like, we were shooting this at a convention. We did the commentary at a convention. I came down the next morning, and John was like, you know, I hope people understand. I wasn't trying to brag about the fact that I got kind of aroused during that scene. I just thought it was an interesting anecdote. I was like, don't worry, John. People totally understand. I go over across the hall to Bill Moseley. First thing out of his mouth is, hey, that was really something about that John Dugan boner story, wasn't it? I'm like, well, so much for nuance. So much for that. That's just that. So I was like, yeah, it was something about that boner story. So and listen for that if you care to.
I got to say, as a fan of that DVD, there's some extra fantastic extras on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 DVD.
I actually pitched that to them. They didn't want to do it because it was the 20th anniversary and the beginning was coming out in theaters. I said, let's do this. And
yeah,
that was a joy because that's a really underrated classic. And they don't make them like that anymore.
No. Not Golan and Globus. No. Hell no. Let's talk about John Dies at the End. I'll start with you, Michael.
I mean, that movie, it's all over the map. It is flawed in very many ways, but it's an original. Even though it's based on a book, it is. What I love about Don Coscarelli is he made Phantasm, made Beastmaster, he made a few Phantasm sequels, but the last couple years he's done Bubba Hotep, he's done this movie. God bless him for it. Whether you like that movie or not, it's not something you've seen before.
Right.
I can say this about John Dies at the End, whether you respond to that movie or not, because it's a very weird, just, it's on its own wavelength. I have not seen that movie before. And it's got some great performances in it. The direction is very loose. It's very funny, but it's not goofy. But it's got, I really dug it. It's a film I think I'm going to like more and more I go back and revisit it.
Very good. Brad?
That is one I actually missed. So okay. I don't have a chance to hate it.
Okay. Well, good. There's lots of time. I don't think everything works, but I love John Dies at the End because it keeps trying. Even as the end credits are rolling, it just keeps trying with different plot points, different ideas, switching genres. I love that it's a film that is constantly just kind of setting itself on fire and throwing itself in the flame and just going, let's see what happens.
Yes. It's I adore John Dies at the End because it tries so many different things. It is a fearless film because it'll try anything that it possibly can. From turning a doorknob into things that would make a man very scared and say, that door can't be opened. I'm not going to ruin that joke for you. I can't do that in good conscience because it's hilarious. To having a monster made out of frozen meats, to going to alternate dimensions, to the thing goes all over the map. And I love the ending, mm-hmm. especially the alternate dimension, is all I will say, because it's just so... It's just fun. Sometimes horror movies just need to be a blast.
It's great when you're watching a movie realizing, like, a quarter of the way through, halfway through, oh man, I haven't seen this movie before.
And I don't know where this is taking me.
I don't know where to go. I don't, like, Cabin in the Woods was the same way. They reach a point where that movie's like, shit if I know where this is going to go. And I love that. And it's so rare these days, because I can tell you, sometimes from the first frames of, like, half the movies that come out, I know how this is going to end. I know which of these assholes is still going to be alive. I know that's going to annoy me that he's still going to be alive. She's going to die this way. He's going to die this way. And it's not scary.
A lot of horror movies, as long as you're willing to go for the ride, you're going to have a good time. Sometimes they make it very difficult for you to give a rat's ass about going on that ride.
Yeah.
John Dies at the End, give it five minutes and you're in.
Yeah.
That's you'll have to see where it goes at least.
I'll throw out one more title. There's a lot to throw out, but just one more title, and then we'll definitely start wrapping with the audience. I'll start with you, Dave. One Bodies, a zombie rom-com. What'd you think?
I should have hated this movie. I'm a zombie guy. I'm a huge zombie guy. Then it was pitched as Twilight for zombies, and I'm like, oh, God.
That was a mistake.
That was a huge mistake.
Calling it that.
The film, there's no doubt, it definitely throws a lot of the mythology of zombies out the window, but it creates its own universe, and it plays by its own rules, and it was a friggin' blast. I loved that movie because it, as long as you're willing to roll, once again, go for the ride, roll with those changes, there's a lot of heart to it, there's a lot of actual humor, and unlike Twilight, there's actually emotion in this movie.
And no sparkly zombies.
No sparkly zombies. Yeah, it's kind of a charming film, it really is. Did you like it, Brad?
No, I actually missed that one, but I just want to say that I'm extremely ecstatic that his movie from 4 years ago, All the Boys Love Mandy Lane,
Finally getting released. Yep.
And if any of you are from around here, it's playing at the Stanley Film Festival in 2 weeks. So that one's going to be a great one to see.
One of the lost films. The last people are like, where's this film? What happened to it with Amber Heard?
Mm-hmm.
It's a slasher film, sort of. Yeah, kind of a postmodern take of the slasher film. It's a fine film. It's very original. And do you know why the studio sat on it for, 4 or 5 years?
Probably had something to do with...
He got caught up in a bankruptcy.
That.
Of course.
That's usually what happens.
He got sold. One company was going to do it, then they sold it to another company. That company went bankrupt, and the company that was originally going to bring it out bought it back from that company after bankruptcy proceedings, which took 4 years.
Generally, with horror movies, that's always what happens. I mean, the Poughkeepsie tapes.
What?
You can find
Where
it online.
That?
We'll never
you
see
can
that.
You can find it online. It's not hard to find. Well, I'm not advocating going downloading it illegally, but it is online. It's not a great movie. But I can. There's a scene in it that is fucking creepy as hell. It's kind of like a mock doc type thing, like Lake Mungo, sort of thing.
Or like the scene from Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, stretched to a feature length.
Kind of, yeah. It's definitely interesting, but it's definitely not the reason. Like, its quality is not the reason it's disappeared. No one just wants to buy it and distribute it.
I mean, look at Cabin in the Woods. That took 3 years.
Yeah,
and that
movie
was a fully completed film with, you would think, some recognizable people in it.
Yeah.
That is just funny. They wait 3 years, and then Joss Whedon gets the Avengers during that time. And then, of course, Chris Hemsworth becomes Thor. Now all of a sudden, oh, now we'll release that. It's like, you bastard.
I'm just glad they didn't convert it to 3D. They were talking about doing
that.
Right.
That's why it was delayed initially.
Yeah, it was why. And then Whedon stepped in and said, this isn't going to work, guys. Yeah. It's just not going to work.
Let's take some questions or comments from anyone out here. In the back.
So you talked a little bit about like the Texas Chainsaw remakes and things like that. What are your opinions on remakes, and do you think that there's really any original ideas left out there to be done?
Can I start?
Please, sir. Yeah.
This has come up a lot lately, especially over the last 10 years. It really started with the Texas Chainsaw remake, the sort of modern wave of going back to films from the 70s and the 80s and just pulling, what, you know, it's like, they look at it, that's a title, we know that title, people know that title, let's make another movie out of it. I don't have anything against the principle of remakes. I think there have been a lot of great remakes throughout history. In fact, most stories in one way or another have been told, and we're kind of always remaking things to a degree. The problem with it is that if you're going to do a remake, what I don't understand with a lot of these modern ones, especially over the last 10 years, if it's really just about a marketing hook, and it's just about a title and whatever, why not swing for the fences with it? Why not do something? The best remakes are the ones that take the basic core idea and then they use that to make their own film out of. Look at John Carpenter's The Thing, David Cronenberg's The Fly. Aside from the fact that there's a guy who gets turned into a fly, there's very little that connects Cronenberg's The Fly to the Vincent Price movie at all. Right. Tonally, stylistically, I mean, nothing at all. And none of these remakes do, none of them, hardly any of them. I can only think of maybe two or three that have actually done that. Ironically, the one I was the most resistant to because I just loved the movie and it was so important to me was Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead, whether you like that remake or not, it's not George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. They took the zombies in the mall, and then Zack Snyder and company, they went off and did a completely different film. Still Dawn of the Dead, but not a slavish imitation of George Romero's movie. All the other remakes, to a large degree, have been almost shot for shot. And like inexcusable, like Prom Night. How can you screw that up? Prom Night, the first movie, sucks. I mean, that's a great idea. Let's remake some shitty movies that actually had some potential. And so for me, whenever I sit there through a remake and I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, they did that. But I don't want to bring the original into the theater with me. I want to give that film a chance to impress me on its own merits. But if I'm consistently being reminded of the fact, yeah, that's from the original, yeah, okay, uh-huh, that's the, yeah. Mm-hmm. Evil Dead was a prime example of that. Well made. A lot of people are kind of focusing on the fact how gory it was. It's like, oh, it's so gory, it's so bloody, it's all practical effects. It's like, yeah, but that's all icing and no cake. I didn't have it. There was none of the narrative drive to that feature that the original had. It didn't have the. There was no fun for me. I just sat there impassively, and with the exception of Dawn of the Dead, the Last on the House, Last House on the Left remake, which I really liked a lot. I thought that did some very interesting things. Damn it! Get some filmmakers in there and just let them swing for the fences. Do something original with that idea. There's a lot of ways to do that. And so many of these things feel like they're just being, they take the original script, change a few names and a couple of plots, and then just say, that's good enough. And that, no, it's not good enough. And it's a waste of everyone's time at the end of the day, I think.
Yeah. Brett?
I, like you said, I have nothing against the principle of remakes. If you view it objectively as like just a standalone film entirely, you can go in having a great time. I thought Dawn of the Dead, it's a stupid movie, but God, is it fun.
Yeah, it really
and
is.
And Last House on the Left, I absolutely loved.
Yeah.
Then there were some, like The Hills Have Eyes, I thought was terrible. Mm-hmm. I thought the remake of Day of the I Spit on Your Grave, whatever they decided to call it,
right.
was, like, awful. Just, it was an hour and a half of just straight rape and torture with absolutely no substance.
Yeah.
But as a whole, I mean, you know, I think there are certain films out there that could definitely be remade. I watched, and this is an odd film, I think, that to be remade, but Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That movie, aside from just being hilariously awesome, it's dark. Like, the scene when he makes the puppet out of the guy,
right. That
is a dark scene. And there are just, with modern technology, like he's doing the hand puppets and swallows them into a shadow of a dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah.
So many scenes like that, that's the only time I would be completely happy for almost a shot-for-shot remake, just with modern technology, a director who knows how to have fun with it. Hell, Zack Snyder,
mm-hmm.
I think, could have fun with that, and no. He does not make good movies,
no.
Generally.
Yeah, no, no.
Man of Steel, notwithstanding, which I hear is apparently very, very good.
I am looking
but yeah, as a whole, remakes can work. Evil Dead certainly didn't work in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, Evil Dead got me into horror. 20, God knows, how many years ago.
And I wasn't that upset with the idea of remaking Evil Dead at all. I was actually kind of encouraged by it.
I used to be like that. Yeah. I used to be like so anti-remake because, hey, let's throw the money on an original story. That'll be great. Because, I mean, Cabin in the Woods was an original story. I mean, it used the tropes, obviously, but it was an original story. And you put a good director behind it that has a fan following, and you're going to bank. Horror, horror comedy, it doesn't matter. But now it's just like, you know, whatever, I'll see it. I'll see a remake just for the hell of it. And every once in a while you get surprised. And I think that's the fun part of being a horror fan, is that 98% of it is utter shit. So when you find a 2% that's amazing...
and you just hold us a whole precious... It's like you're precious. It's like, finally a good movie. Oh, thank God.
It speaks to you, like, it speaks to you in whatever way, like, you know, it opens up to you. And I mean, the past 13 years, there's three movies that I obsess about. So it's... Finding that diamond in the rough, I think, is great. And I think that's almost impossible with remakes, but yeah. In the end, that 98%, 97% of that is going to be just dumb fun horror.
I agree with both of you. It tends to be such a monetary decision, of course, and my opinion is that the studio is going about it the wrong way. And what I mean is that 13 years ago, Warner Brothers re-released The Exorcist, and just a few weeks ago, Universal Studios re-released Jurassic Park. They're making a fortune on these films because they already paid for these movies. These movies are finished. They're really just paying for the posters and they're paying for the trailers, but really, it's chump change. They're making a fortune on these movies they've had in their vaults. And I, for one, would love to see a lot of these movies that I loved growing up back in the theater. I don't want to see Vin Diesel as the tall man in the Phantasm remake. I'm just making that up. I don't want to see that. I want to see
how Phantasm.
That's awful. I want to see the original Phantasm back in the theater where it belongs. I wish they would bring these movies back. I really, really do. I mean, we mentioned just a few of these here. I'm just going to throw out these titles. These are remakes that we've seen the last 10 years, and the last 10 years is very telling. And tell me how many of these movies are great or even good or even passable.
Yeah.
We got, okay, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, A Nightmare in Elm Street,
sucks.
Friday the 13th,
sucks.
The Amityville Horror,
oh God, sucks.
The worst one possibly, The Hitcher.
Oh God, it sucks.
Awful. Willard.
I liked Willard.
Like Crispin Glover. We're softies. All right. When a Stranger Calls.
Sucks.
Okay. Fright Night.
I like Fright Night.
I'm all right.
You're alone on that one.
Fright Night sucked.
Hello.
Yeah,
we love.
And I'm not gay, and I'm okay with that too.
All right, Nicolas Cage in The Wicker Man.
No.
Thank you.
Everything Nicolas Cage in is awesome. Deal with it.
Okay, you already said Prom Night.
No, damn.
Let's see, The Stepfather, one of my favorites.
Oh shit.
Halloween 1 and 2. What do you guys think of Rob Zombie's Halloween 1 and 2?
Yes.
No. You know what? I will give Rob Zombie credit. The first half of the Halloween remake I was really into.
It was different.
It had nothing to do with Halloween.
Right.
And then it was like halfway through he went, oh, shit, I got to remake Halloween.
That's not who Rob Zombie is.
Yeah. No, Rob Zombie is great. Let him do his original stuff. I don't want to... Yeah. He doesn't need to remake crap.
All right, this is one of your favorites, David. Quarantine.
Oh, God.
Remake of Wreck.
No, Wreck is such... has anyone not seen Wreck?
Wreck's good.
Wreck's very good.
It's a Spanish film. It's a zombie movie.
Actually,
survival
Wreck 2
horror.
Better.
I do, too. Yeah. Wreck 2 I thought was phenomenal. Wreck 3, it's okay.
I liked Wreck 3.
I haven't seen Wreck 3.
Wreck 3 was funny.
It was funny, but...
Don't forget the remake of The Fog.
I'm getting there.
That's not even a real movie.
This is an obscure one, because most people hadn't seen the original, you might have, Michael. The Crazies.
Remake of The Crazies was awesome.
I didn't hate that one either. That one kind of went off and did its own thing, too. I didn't think it was all that effective a movie, but I give it credit. It's not an imitation. Actually, the remake of George's films, with, I think, one notable exception, have been largely pretty good, actually.
Okay. Okay, David, one of your favorites, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
No, you should be.
I hate that movie. I hate
so
that
bad.
Movie.
It was terrible.
The stupidest main characters that I've seen in a long time. I was becoming aggressively rooting for them all to die. Because as opposed to, I know we've talked about Insidious in the past, we're in a haunted house, we need to move. Okay, honey, let's move. It was such a novel concept. This, you know what you're talking about, baby. We're going to be okay.
No.
Beyond the fact that the creature's going to get the girl, she's standing at the light switch. Turn on to look at what's going on and see the unintended consequences.
The best part is when she traps one of them in the bookshelf.
Right.
Everyone, not just her parents, everyone at that goddamn party saw this little monster that's been terrorizing their daughter, and then cuts to the next scene of her in bed. Let's call a psychiatrist. This is an illusion here. There's a dead body there.
I yelled.
And it's just like, are you kidding me?
I yelled at the studio rep after the screening got over. We were sitting there through the credits, and I feel so bad for Barry because we were just sitting next to me. Well, what do you think about the movie? And I'm like, oh, don't ask me. Because I don't want to tell the studio that their movie blows. But I was just like, that was offensively stupid. And she... So, Barry, what do you think of the movie?
Wasn't Katie Holmes in it?
Holmes was in it, yeah.
Hi.
Let's go back to the list, guys. Piranha.
Which one?
Piranha.
Oh, Piranha?
Piranha.
The first one was dumb.
The remake?
The remake, yeah.
The second one, no.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The remake or 3DD?
The remake, and then 3DD.
The remake was a blast.
Yeah, the remake was a lot of fun. I mean, come on.
Stupid, but it was a blast.
I mean, anytime you see a movie where a piranha coughs up Jerry O'Connell's penis in 3D,
that was
special. I give it points for that.
The sequel to that was just... It was a lot of nothing, and then like 5 minutes of boredom at a water park.
When David Hasselhoff is the best part of your movie, it's over.
We got two John Carpenter remakes, The Fog and The Thing. What'd you think?
Okay, well, first of all, The Thing isn't really a remake. It's actually a prequel.
It's a half-assed prequel.
I give that movie a lot of credit. Actually, The Thing is one of my films I'm a disciple of. It's like in the top five of all time. I know every frame of that thing.
Sure.
They gave that a really good shot. I can tell, though, what happened is the studio at some point came in and said, we need to CGI the hell out of this thing. And the ending was like out of Men in Black. It made no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of good intent put into that movie. And I give them credit for giving it the best shot they could, but they should have been left alone. Okay. The Fog remake, though, feels like an outtake reel stretched to 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It is... Shit.
It's terrible.
I think the Thing prequel is a fun monster movie. It's a good creature feature, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't belong... If it's not going to be The Thing, don't call it The Thing, really. I mean, that tacked-on part at the end where, oh, we got to tie this into the movie somehow. We forgot. Let's do it post-credits. Was sad because it kind of really just undermined anything that movie may have accomplished.
It was an afterthought, the way it tried to connect the films.
Yeah. I don't think it was originally intended to be like that. I think, like I said, there was some tinky... I can tell that it was like... It's funny, the more and more the movie goes on, the more and more the CGI takes over. So something began to just smell kind of fishy with that. But I give that movie a mild thumbs up, actually.
Okay. House of Wax.
Hey, Paris Hilton gets a big thing through her head, so, you know. Actually, that one's not bad. That one's not bad. It's got some stylistic moments. It doesn't have Vincent Price, so that's immediate debit. So,
right.
You know, what are you going to do?
My Bloody Valentine.
Not bad, not good, though. Okay. 3D... The 3D was surprisingly effective in it.
Yes, it was. It was.
Yeah.
How about the remake of The Omen?
What about it?
And
the kid wasn't scary.
No, he wasn't.
They went out of their way to find a creepy kid and ended up not being creepy. He just wanders around the whole room going, and I'm
he's
like,
angsty.
But he's like, oh, I'm Damon, I'm so evil. The original kid wasn't like that. He was just kind of a blank slate, so you kind of read the evil into him. Whereas with this kid's like, I'm evil Damien. I'm like, what a dumb this little fuck. No one would get anywhere near him, let alone, you know, let him run around and not think anything was going. A stupid, shitty movie.
You need to learn not to hold back so much either, sir.
I'm sorry.
Last one. How about the recent big budget remake of The Wolfman? Benicio Del Toro and Anthony Hopkins.
I think they've already...
God, that one went right out of my head. That was one of those, again, I think that was so many things went wrong with that before they even rolled film on it, that it was like, you know, why hire Rick Baker to do your werewolf effects if you're just going to come
CGI.
In and replace it all with CGI?
And won the Oscar for best makeup, which doesn't make any sense.
No, it was one of those movies where it's like, you can do a good remake of this, and werewolves have gotten the shit end of the stick for so many years. Really, the last great werewolf movie was what? The Howling?
Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, well, Dog Soldiers was really good.
And one part of Trick or Treat.
No. I love Trick or Treat. That's another movie
Trick or Treat's a brilliant film.
Trick or Treat is one everyone should go see. That was one of those ones where it's like, damn it, you had a good movie and you just threw it away. Nice work on that, you know? I just want to share this one little anecdote.
Please.
This will illuminate why a lot of these movies get made. A couple years ago, the CEO of Universal, it was the summer of 2011, came out and actually apologized for a lot of the crappy movies that Universal had been making during the summer. He said, oh, Cowboys and Aliens, we should have done a better job with that. Land of the Lost, I'm really sorry, it was a turd. And he pretty much threw like all his filmmakers, everyone had been working for him the last three, seven, you know, five. He went back all the way to Bay Pig in the City, which was not right. But he basically, what he's been saying is, all these movies are terrible. We couldn't get a movie like A Beautiful Mind made now. And people were like, wow, that was a really brave thing for him to say, to go out there. And I kind of was like, well, I think it's a little disingenuous. You greenlit all these things. Right. At some point, maybe you should look at your own development process. But I really have a problem with that statement now, because at the time he was making that statement, they were making Battleship.
I know someone who unapologetically loves that movie.
Well,
unless he's just being ironic about the whole thing, he claims he loves it.
It's like you were making Battleship at the same time you were apologizing for the shit you had already done. You should have been saying, oh, by the way, we're making one more big turd right now. It's going to take a little while to squeeze this one out. But when it does, it's just like, I don't accept your apology. And that's why these things happen. They take a brand name, and it was like with that movie, it's like you put $200 million into essentially a name. People know what Battleship is. Why didn't you get an incredibly talented writer-director in there to basically, all you needed to do was deliver a movie that had a battleship in it. That's all you needed to do. But what do we get? We got Transformers on the water.
Right.
Yay.
Operation, the movie.
Yeah.
The movie game for Dopey Dog.
You know what I want? I want Chutes and Ladders, the movie.
Candyland.
Hungry, Hungry Hippos would rock on sci-fi.
On sci-fi?
And that's exactly what happens with these horror movies. They just go, they mine the thing and go, that's a name. We can do something with that. And it's...
You get the sense that the powers that be don't know what they're doing. There was a very recent story about Rupert Murdoch saying that of the films that 20th Century Fox, which he, of course, oversees, have released, that he regrets Fight Club and the Thin Red Line.
Oh, now that's just...
Oh, he's good.
It is, yeah, it is Rupert Murdoch.
It's, I know, but it's the same thing. Like,
because they didn't make money for him at the time.
Exactly. The wrong people are pushing the green light for these films. Another question or comment?
Yeah. Sorry,
you, sir.
I really enjoyed Agencies of Death.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a future for vignette horror films?
It seems to be at the moment. They're picking up traction.
I think there's definitely a place for anthology films, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
ABC's of Death was just, it was grueling to sit through. There was definitely some brilliance in that. The dogfighting is one of the best things I've seen in years. Because it took you from this point of, it's heartbreaking. You're like, what are you doing to this dog? And then it turns on a dime and you're like, oh, hell yes. And it's brilliant in that aspect. There are parts, I think the vignettes portion, trying to fit 26 shorts into 2 hours, was a little bit too ambitious. I'll be really honest.
I think they work if, like, to use Trick or Treat as an example, it is technically an anthology,
but it's
all couched within a massive story surrounding the spirit of Halloween and Sam, this little kid who represents it. And if more people do that, it could work. The you know, the biggest problem with something like, say, VHS or something like that, or ABCs of Death, is, like you said, you're gonna have, that was awesome, what the hell is that? That was okay, that sucked, boring. You're never going to get a consensus on, like, this is a good movie. You're going to have, it had good parts to it.
Like Chillerama.
Chillerama didn't really have it.
No, except that I hate that movie.
Diary of Anne Frankenstein made me laugh my ass off.
The Diary of Anne Frankenstein
like
is
Adam
worth
Green
watching
at all,
by
that
itself.
Was, that segment was hilarious.
Because it's like Blazing Saddles meets Frankenstein. It's one of the oddest and most funniest things.
I almost wish they would do is like get like 10 filmmakers together and say, we have 4 slots in this movie. We're going to let you go make 10 movies. The 4 that really are the best will make it into the actual movie. Because the problem with some of these little anthology films like VHS, and like, invariably some of them are going to be turds. And the problem is, these anthology movies cannot survive if it's always up, down, up,
right.
down, up, down. After a while, it just becomes kind of, you need to build it a certain way. Like Creepshow for me is a great example of how to do it, because you have stories that build and then crescendo, then come back down a little bit, then gently rise back up. And there's one director, one writer, it's a unifying vision. But sometimes when you get these like all-star director teams together and writer teams together, even though there may be sort of a unifying thread that connects them all, there's not necessarily a unifying vision.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily work.
It's like what you were saying, Brad, with Trick or Treat, what that film did was the same thing that Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, did, which is one of my favorite horror anthology films. There's actually a story they go back to. There is some kind of bookend that is engaging. It's not just story. It's not like Twilight Zone, the movie, where it is the roller coaster effect, because some of the episodes are lopsided in the narrative sense.
Yeah, for summer. And yeah, because Twilight Zone's a great example where it starts off kind of eh.
And then it gets good
hits
at the very
rock
end.
Rock bottom with Spielberg's
yes,
moment.
It does.
It was like basically, is art old people cute?
Let me spell
well,
tonight.
No. And then Dante's and then George Miller's, but it's like, it almost doesn't survive that
right.
that second episode.
Yeah.
Let me throw a crazy idea out there, because there's something I think that can be done with specifically ABC's of Death, and it's kind of a really twisted idea for me to come up with, but the problem that I had with the film is it was like an episode of The Family Guy. Did you like this short? Did you like this short? Did you like this short? And it's going all over the board. I think it would be a brilliant idea to kind of take the Disney model of how when they do these animated shorts once in a while, pair the horror short with a film that it actually matches with tonally, and I think you're going to get a lot better reaction
That's
to it.
That's a good idea. I like that. It's fun to see. I went and saw a great little movie called I Sell the Dead a couple years ago, which was really, really entertaining, and Larry Fessenden was in it, and it was Glenn McQuaid's film. Really, really good. They had a short before it, which was Treevenge, which was Jason Eisner's killer Christmas tree short. It primed the audience so perfectly for that movie. And it was just like, yeah, I would like to see more pairings like that. Give them a little dose of something at the beginning, and then give them the feature. Make that's a really great. They used to do that with cartoons
right.
all the time,
exactly.
And they don't do that anymore.
Isn't he prepping Treevenge for a feature?
I'm sure he is. It's Jason Eisner. I don't know if you guys know the name. He did Hobo with a Shotgun,
yes.
Which he is an incredibly talented guy. Because what I love about Jason is nicest guy in the world. But when it comes to the filmmaking, he's like. There are no limits. I will do anything. It's like, burn up a whole bunch of school kids in a bus. I'll set fire to them. And I'll actually make it funny. And it's like, I love a filmmaker who's willing to just toss it all to the wind and actually has the talent to back it up.
I think we have time for one more question. You, sir.
Sorry? Curiosity, from a film critic standpoint, what do you guys think is more scarier? Because personally for me, I think the gorier the movie is, the more... blood, more things that you see, the least scary it is. I think the scarier the movie is, more psychological it is.
I think Seven is a beautiful example of exactly what you just said, because that movie really doesn't show that much gore. The more imaginative you are, the more jacked up that movie gets, because they start talking about the details of how people died, but they don't show much. And you start thinking about how this guy got, and his stomach burst,
Or the scene with when he describes how he had to kill the hooker with the knife.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And thank God you never see any of that, because it would ruin it. And Seven, how many people did not think that guy was still alive on the bed when they first saw that movie? Because of that suckered you in. Because you're just sitting there like, okay, it's a corpse on the bed. Yeah, it's too bad. And all of a sudden, he takes that breath. Everyone in the theater, I'll never forget this. It immediately cut to a very quiet scene right after that. Everyone in the theater was like, oh, God. Yeah, oh, God. Yeah. I can't do this anymore. I can't. And there was no gore.
Not equal scary.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Well, it comes down to, I think, the difference between like the object and the abject. You're going to have a movie that will inspire revulsion. And it's cringeworthy, and you're going to be like, oh, God, and cover your eyes while watching it. Then you have the type of movie that stays with you after you leave. Or even just gets you thinking about various things, like, you know, you walk in, you run to your light to turn the light on in your house. So, but in the end, it all comes down to fear is very subjective, which is why I think it's incredibly difficult to make a horror movie that's both good and original. I mean, you can debate that, you know, for days on end, but that's both good and genuinely frightening to a broader audience. Which, and I'm... in a very small camp here, which is why I think Paranormal Activity does work.
I think they do too. I mean, some of the sequels, not so much. But
The sequels, give or take. But the first one, I saw it before all the hype surrounding it at a film festival, and I walked out and I was just utterly shell-shocked over how good it was. It was simplistic, basic, kind of hated the characters. They're kind of douchey throughout most of the film. But within the context of what's happening to them, it kind of makes sense. Because they address the whole, let's just leave. You can't, it's going to follow her around. So he tries to become the alpha male and all that. But it effectively builds up the scares with more than just a door opening and closing.
Yeah.
Like the first one, you hear the keys drop. And then the big loud banging behind them while they're in bed. And just it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And then it drops a little bit. And then there's this big thing at the end.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen any of the deleted endings... way better than the theatrical one.
Yeah.
Same thing goes with Blair Witch. I think some of the alternate endings were far better than Blair Witch, and that movie's freaking. I saw that
with Blair Witch.
Yeah, they're like
I like the current one.
I love
there are four or five different ways that ended at with various facings, and I won't
get
into it.
The problem with excessive gore and special effects is it's entertaining, but excessive gore after a while, to me, becomes funny.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it gets so over the top. It's like, Jesus, how much more of this getting? And you get numb to it after a while. And it's not inherently scary.
Like Dead Alive.
Yeah, Dead Alive. I love Evil Dead 2. Great
That's
example.
All tongue in cheek.
Yeah, it is. There's a. You have to establish a tone in order for that stuff to work. Best examples of, look at the original The Haunting, the Robert Wise film.
Oh, I love that movie.
You hear it. You never see it. A door moves, some clanging. Then go watch the remake they did in 1999, which had all the special effects magic in the world. It's about as scary as an episode of The Smurfs. Actually, The Smurfs was scary. But it's a matter of The Thing. The remake of The Thing, for as much as you see, the reason I keep going back to that movie is that there's shots of hallways where I can't see the end of the hallway. There's a mood he establishes with that. I'm always looking to see other stuff, and there's a creepy mentality that gets established with that movie that never goes away. That's so hard to do these days, because filmmakers today don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
They don't know how to genuate a consistent tone and build suspense. They just don't know how to do it.
If you look at horror movies in the past, 40, 50 years, all of the films that are considered the best in the genre, Alien, The Thing, Chainsaw Massacre, none of them rely on gore at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's obviously some in The Thing. It is effectively a creature feature.
Yeah.
But most of it is built through, holy crap, who is it?
Yeah.
And it's Alien, you don't...
Right.
Yeah, Alien, you don't see the alien really until towards the end. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre, everyone is like, oh, it's this exceedingly gross, disgusting film. It's like, there's hardly any blood in it.
It would get a PG-13
there's some.
For the blood. The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre has like three instances where there's a little blood.
Yeah.
You never see a chainsaw come into contact with a human body until the very end, when Leatherface accidentally cuts himself. That's it. The rest of it's all implied.
One of my favorite unloved horror movies is The Third Exorcist. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
This hallway scene.
It's terrifying.
You don't see
anything. It's all implied. It's like a ghost story. They tell you all the things that you're missing. They imply heavily. Otherwise,
I was in the theater opening day for that, and I was sitting in the back. And for those of you who have seen The Exorcist 3, you know what scene I'm talking about. William Peter Blatty, the director, just locks the camera off for about 10 minutes of a shot of a hospital hallway with people coming and going, and nothing's happening. But you know something's up. But nothing's happening. Nurse walks in the room, walks out of the room, cop walks down the room, people are talking, blah, blah, blah. And then a scare happens that scares... I literally saw the entire audience go up and then come down.
Yeah. See, that only works if everything prior to that film works.
Otherwise, you're just sitting there going, this is boring. But he had you in the grip because you knew something was coming, but he gave you no indication, and he carried it two or three beats further than anyone would have rationally done.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, well, maybe there isn't going to be something. It was it's a brilliant film in and of itself.
Yeah.
I love it.
That type of risk needs to be taken more. This isn't really a horror film. Who's seen Birth? With Nicole Kidman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The scene on her face in the opera or the symphony that she's attending,
right.
It's a 5-minute static shot, her face like right in the middle of just everything that's played out through her face as she slowly realizes everything that's been happening.
Right.
And it's not a scary movie, but it's definitely a haunting film.
Yeah.
So you're watching it and just this wave of anguish slowly appears over her face. And again, everything up to that needs to work, but that type of scare in the I guess the loosest sense of the word needs to happen more often.
Sure.
Directors have become very timid. A lot of writers have just become very timid. They give you the bare minimum that they're looking for out there, and they figure that's enough to get that opening weekend, which will then feed the DVD release. And that's not good enough. It's just not good enough. And that's why when they do swing for the fences with The Cabin in the Woods or something like that, it stands out so amazingly more vibrant. And what really gets me is that some people are offended by that. It shakes them out of the complacency of the modern horror films. Like, oh, I like that Cabin in the Woods movie. It thought it was so smart, though. I'm like, because it was smart.
And
you're not used to that.
That's the problem with, like, gore flicks versus, like, slow burn flicks. It's like, indie slow burn flicks, again, to use a completely fabricated percentage, 99% are bad, because a lot of it is, I saw one called Entrance, and it's a girl walking around for an hour and a half before devolving into a half-baked slasher film. It's just, they think they can, like, mix the indie sensibility of just people talking in a cafe, and call it slow burn by having something scary happening at the
end. But there is hope, too. I mean, you showed me the last Will and Testament, Rosalind...
Oh, Gugino's film.
The Last Will and Testament of Rosalind is one of the best horror films I've ever seen.
If you whenever it comes out here, you need to see it.
It'll be coming out on DVD and VOD soon.
And
find it.
Yeah, it's Rio Gugino, who was the editor and the publisher of Rumored Magazine. It's his first movie. Yeah.
And then you also have... one of my personal favorites was Rambach. It's been pitched as Rambach, Berlin Undead. Really, if you want to think about it, it's Dawn of the Dead remake meets Rear Window. And it's
fun. It's only like 6 to 5
It's an hour long. But it's a fully fleshed out story with characters and people you actually care about. And it's, I think, for everything that we're critical of, we want horror to be better. And part of that is us taking a baseball bat to the crappy movies, but also saying, these movies are good.
I don't want to sound like we're too down on everything.
No, there's clearly hope. There's clearly good stuff. As we said, we got to find this stuff. We got to look for it.
I just think the disparity is even greater today, though, from the good stuff and the bad stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems to me that... the bad just keeps getting worse, and the good, while it continues to be as good as it is, it's just fewer and farther between. And I'm getting a little. That's why I've stopped seeing so much stuff, because it's like I look at it and I know I'm not going to like this right off the bat, and I don't want to prejudge a movie. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's just like, how many more Evil Dead remakes am I going to have to sit through? What? You know, and I don't want to bash that movie too much because it wasn't the worst of the lot, but it's indicative of style over real substance. You know.
It's interesting though. I mean, if we have time for this,
I think we're about out.
We're about out.
Because I want to mention these.
Finish your thought.
It's interesting because the past year or so, in leading up to the end of this year, there was some great stuff coming out. Last year, I saw, to go back to your initial question of the movies that scared me the most, I saw a little Canadian film called The Conspiracy at Fantastic Fest last year. The final half hour, 45 minutes of that movie, I'm sitting there on the edge of my seat, just going like. Just like, you know, completely shocked over where they're taking it, because it is it's found footage. It's part faux doc, then it goes into found footage, and they do it with such an even hand that it is just absolutely terrifying. And then Last Will and Testament, Rosalind Lee, find it, see it, fall in love with it. It's brilliant. And The Battery, it's a zombie film, but it's like a road movie. It was made for $6,000. It focuses less on the zombies than it does the dynamic between the two main characters. It was made for less for about $6,000 and a little extra for post-production and all that jazz. One of the most brilliant films I've seen in a long time. So
would you give that an A or a triple A? Get it bad.
Put that on the DVD box. If you like that, click, put it on the box.
Like we hosted them at the Telluride Horror Show last year, and it received an insane reception. I've yet to see a bad review of it. It is a brilliantly written film. The just amazing, hilarious dialogue. It's tense. It's dark. It's gritty. It's definitely something to keep an eye out for. It's going to be hitting VOD and DVD in, I think, June.
The Battery.
Yes.
Yeah, and when you see a movie being pelted with too many horror film with too many quotes out there, make sure you look and see who the quote's from. If you don't recognize the name, trust me.
If it's Peter Travers, just ignore it.
Yeah, or if it's a quote like, this movie runs 90 minutes.
or if they quote a Twitter user.
Yeah, that's it. Twitter says this movie doesn't suck too much.
Thank you so much, everyone. This is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you.